Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube, and this is Season 4. Follow Goddamn GameCube on social for updates on the show, and subscribe to us on YouTube for bonus video content. Thank you, and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Riley are your hosts today. My brother Nick, the intern, is here. And I want to introduce Shannon, our second intern. She's going to be doing an audio production internship with Goddamn GameCube. Shannon, welcome. Hello.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to be talking about Vampire today, a game by Don't Nod. And now before I kick this to Riley to start, I just want to say this is a game that I didn't think we would ever talk about. This is one of those where I think I either picked it up at GameStop a million times, put it down, and I didn't really know what it was. And when I kind of saw that it was almost like a Bloodborne-y action game, I said, I'm intrigued enough to give it a shot. Okay. So, Riley, why don't you take us on this Twilight adventure? Go ahead. Let's do it.
Thank you, Greg. Welcome to our vampire discussion. Hope you're having a good time. Okay, so as you mentioned, this is an action RPG developed by Don't Nod Entertainment and published by Focus Home Interactive in 2016. I have not played any Don't Nod games. Greg, you have played Life is Strange?
Yeah, so I've played Life is Strange, and I think the strangest part about playing Vampire was...
So to speak.
Exactly. And what I said was... this is the Life is Strange people. Like, it's the same team. I don't think they've ever made an action game. It could be their first one. And also, you know, this game, it didn't review very well. And like I said, I kind of picked it up a bunch of times. And I'm really glad that I played it.
Yeah.
So why don't you continue us down the journey here? Let's go.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm glad you recommended it to both Nick and I. It left a decent impression on me. I think it was a worthwhile purchase. It might be a little odd for the audience that we're covering this, but we're going to get into it here. So I want to drop some names here before we get too far. This game was directed by Philippe Moreau. I'm going to try to pronounce these correctly. Designed by Guillaume Lichtel.
Okay.
Big ups. Written by Stéphane Beauverger. With art direction by Gregory Z. Zeus.
Okay.
How about that? So this team... they felt that vampires were an underexplored and multifaceted opportunity for a game. I think I agree. It is set in 1918 during the Spanish flu epidemic. I wanted to bring up super quickly, kind of interesting to play this in a post-pandemic world, post-pandemic air quotes. But I'm curious how it would have been received if it had released a few years later with knowing what we do now about everything, because I'm like, oh, this is like people are wearing masks, you know, like it's all this paranoia and you know, just kind of, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. Did you feel the same way?
Well, also, I mean, European studio, European game, Americans and the way Americans treated maybe COVID versus other nations.
Maybe it would have been the same. Right? Would have reviewed even more poorly.
You know what I'm getting at.
So in this one, you play as Jonathan Reed, the most serious man in the world, as he attempts to solve the mystery of his transformation into a vampire, attempting to fulfill both his duties as a doctor and his newfound thirst for blood. The concept of a vampire doctor, I believe, was utilized because it explores the dichotomy between compassion and self-preservation at extremes. You have a man of science who is challenged by the existence of the paranormal. I thought that was very relatable. I thought that was cool. Don't think I've seen it too much in a game before. You got a relatively small, manageable London map cut into four districts. I thought personally kind of hard to navigate this setting a little bit on purpose. There's a lot of locked doors at the start, but I liked that you eventually get the rich people's quarantine pass so you can get into other districts. It's a pretty cool, I mean, like, it's better than just getting, like, a key. I like that
a lot.
Sure.
I mean, also, I'm sure we'll talk about this later. This game did, like, a better job with, like, classism than I thought.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I got that all in there. Mm-hmm. As the story unfolds, sort of the divide between the rich and poor starts to crystallize a little bit as one of the major themes. The majority of enemy factions you face are, so you have the Priwen, where the zealous vampire hunters, who, you know, you're kind of at odds with being who you are. The Skulls, which are mostly feral, lower-level vampires that show signs of decay. They're kind of zombie-ish. The Volkods, which are the large, like the beast ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of weird-looking. They're like enforcers or bodyguards. And the Ekkons, who you belong to. They are fully sentient vampires, well-composed, upper-class, hoity-toity.
And now you guys finally understand my Facebook job history, which is
really you're an Ekkon.
Took many, many years for us to understand
what
that.
What is it exactly?
I said I was like a former Ekkon at the Ascalon Club. Yes. Something like that.
Yes, indeed. Yep. So that was something, speaking of the Ascalon Club, what I thought was an interesting aspect of this structure was how Lord Redgrave, who is the leader of the Ascalon Club, he describes his intent to subjugate and eliminate and exterminate the Skulls, so the Ekkons will be accepted by the rest of society.
Mm.
So we're not like those, you know, rabid whatever.
We're not rabid vampires. We're classy.
We're classy vampires.
So, but they very much have a pejorative sort of context. There's a lot of lower class, you know, people who wind up as Skulls, and I thought that was very interesting. Not unlike the mentality of some middle-class people who push each other down or mock / blame the poor in order to feel a closer kinship with the wealthy. I did think that the werewolves were an odd inclusion. It helped diversify the experience a little bit, some different enemies. I didn't feel like they really were fleshed out enough to fit in with the rest of the game. They weren't really developed. Did you feel the same way? How did you feel about the werewolves?
Yeah, I just think like it also like... they weren't really developed or a part of the story other than like, I think there was one boss encounter and a couple of enemies.
Yeah.
It also just like, it really makes me think of like the Twilight romance where there's like a werewolf. There's like, I don't know much about it. Shannon does.
All right. Maybe don't get too far if you don't know too much about it.
That's kind of what popped in my brain is like, this game was like a really hard sell to me to try to sell it to you guys. Cause I'm like, well, it's kind of the same themes as Twilight. Like it's not the same. You should play it. But anyway, when it comes to werewolves, there isn't much there.
Yeah,
you can also turn into one. Isn't that right? With one of your ultimate skills, you turn into like a beast for a little bit.
Yeah.
So there is definitely some. Maybe there is cut content a lot.
You can be both.
Yeah. I don't know if it's technically called a werewolf. I don't know if they actually call them werewolves. Okay.
I think we agree with your opinion. It's a little off message.
It's a little undercooked.
Yeah. A little half baked.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I want to open up to the floor here in general. Vampires and 1800s London have been done a lot in all sorts of media. Did you feel like this game set itself apart?
Yeah, I certainly did. Nick, if you don't mind, I'm going to start. I kind of took it right, from
go,
you.
Please, go right ahead. You're good.
So I think the biggest sell for me was really, I have never seen a morality system done this way. Where if you think vampires, it's always like the Victorian era with the top hats and the suits and whatever. It's always the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
But with me, you kind of brought it up in the intro where it's like you play as a doctor and it's, you have to, you know, be the guy who helps people and serves the public, and you have to resist your urge to fucking eat them. And like, and
yeah.
I have never seen a morality system where if you want to be a good guy, the game is extremely hard.
Yeah.
And I think with this game, I have just never seen, I guess, vampires in this setting where there's some love and romance, which we'll talk about, but that's not the main point.
Yeah.
I've never seen that. That's what I think set it apart. They really put like almost, I don't know what the right word for this is. Like you're a guy who has to serve society, who's been put up against this, I don't know, this monstrous weird thing that's in you. And I've never really seen that in this setting. Nick, I don't know if you can maybe articulate what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So I have a little bit of a different opinion than you do on this. While the gameplay, I think, sets it apart, I don't think the setting really does it any favors.
Yeah, sure.
I think the setting's a bit generic.
Oh, yeah.
And
totally.
You also have the most generic British dude name ever. Like John Reed, that's your name. That's the main character.
Yeah,
like, okay,
exactly.
Very generic. Even the cover art's kind of generic looking too.
I almost think like that's why it was such a hard sell to get to. I'm trying to tell people to play this game, but it's like, it's a vampire game. Yeah, it's in the Victorian era. Yeah, you've seen that every time, but you should play it.
Right.
It's really hard.
Like, I do think what you said, Greg, about the gameplay really does set it apart. And I love how you are a blood transfusion specialty doctor who becomes a vampire.
Right.
That to me is just really funny.
The plot demands it.
Right, exactly. I think it's really funny.
The plot does demand it, yeah.
But I mean, aside from the gameplay and the setting, I was annoyed at the whole being locked out of everywhere. And John Reed saying it's locked is forever embedded in my mind.
It's locked, all right.
Yeah, whenever I go to open a door and it's locked, all I think of is it's locked, all right.
it frustrates because the traversal is kind of a pain in the ass to me. Yeah. Where you wake up in the hospital or whatever, and you gotta, you know, you have to walk all the way. It's like, not that I wanted like fast travel, but maybe like, I don't know, something to make it easier. All right, so. That's been the setting, the premise. We're gonna get into the sights and sounds here a little bit. I have no strong opinions on the visuals personally. I think it looked fine, fairly unremarkable, but I did enjoy how the supernatural elements were portrayed for the most part. A lot of kind of more ubiquitous, abstract, smoky, like people talking to you and stuff. Like, who is this? You know, it develops intrigue successfully. The voice acting is, in particular, is very solid, especially from Jonathan, the generic serious man.
Yeah.
I did want to get into him a little bit more. Anthony Howell is the actor. I think he is a very good... He played Yurt the Silent Chief, our guy from Demon's Souls.
Yep.
A couple other roles. But his performance in this game is very good. I think it could read genuinely as someone who is sincerely compassionate about the people he's talking to, or sinister or predatory. Mm-hmm. It could really go either way.
Mm-hmm.
You said the music is not very remarkable in this game. Mm-hmm. I kind of disagree.
Oh, really?
Like,
okay.
Well, you get the big intense cello performance in the beginning. Like, I mean, here's the thing. In a lot of these games, I've heard it. Like, they don't. This is one of those games where I'm going to listen to something else while I'm playing it.
Sure.
You know, like, so it's not, it's, I think there are memorable aspects, but it's not, you know, mind blowing. The composer who I've just disparaged, his name is Olivier de Riviere. De Riviere sounds a little like derivative to me.
Ooh.
I'm fucking burning this guy. he chose to mix traditional instrumentation with some industrial music, which I thought was interesting, to convey Jonathan's internal conflict. The cello, as I mentioned, features heavily, and its range lends itself very well to evoking both tragedy and monstrosity.
Mm-hmm.
He also chose the choir as an oppressive influence on the main character. The music when you are possessing someone is very unnerving to me. It's like very low kind of chanting and stuff. Like, get a little shiver, little wiggles there. I thought the sound design was somewhat lacking. Personally, I felt that if it had been punched up a little bit, it would have made the combat a little more satisfying.
It's a lot of like squishy noises and grunts.
Yeah, it's very like whatever.
It's very meh.
A little detail I wanted to mention. I like the train that chugs on the tracks above.
Oh,
I
don't know
if you noticed it.
Yep.
No one really draws your attention to it. Doesn't figure into the plot at all. It's just like it's doing its thing in the background. It's a nice little detail. So with that in mind, do you have anything in particular that you'd like to bring up here?
Yeah, sure. I think one of the We'll talk about all the details, but actually I like this game a lot for a lot of reasons, but something that I found weird, or like kind of inherently like you kind of have to get over, is that all of your interactions take place in the dead of night, and I'm like, why isn't anyone in bed? Like, why is everyone just up walking around? Like,
well,
it's really weird.
You do have those conversations where you're like, why are you up at this hour?
Right, but you know, I mean, it's like every night, like, and you kind of have to do it to further the plot.
Yeah,
but like every citizen, every doctor, everyone is just up at like, you know, midnight plus.
Yeah,
like, it's just kind of odd
for indefinitely.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of funny,
Nick. Yeah, so I'll remark on the sound design a little bit. I was going to say, when you mentioned the music, I was like, oh, it's not really remarkable. And then you mentioned the main theme, which I think is pretty good.
It's like, well, as soon as you turn it on, it's like pretty.
Exactly. Other than that, I don't remember any of the OST,
I just think the Christina Perry song is better.
But
go ahead.
I did, I'm not disputing the sound effects being bad, but I did think they had a pretty good use of it. Like when you're walking around, you could sometimes hear the low snarls of skulls around the corner.
Oh, sure.
You can kind of see, oh, okay, so there's something near me.
There's a bit of an atmosphere there.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, I also want to say too, this is not a big budget game.
Right.
Like this was, you know what this game falls into? This sort of AA game that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
I think there were resources put into certain things and not other things, which I'm not saying in a disparaging damaging way, but I think when you have a game that does not have a hundreds of millions of dollars in budget, you have to what are you going to put money towards? And right. I don't think audio design was it.
No,
it was which is fine.
And the other thing I wanted to bring up, I do think the voice acting was generally very good.
Yes.
Yeah, I told you both this. My one huge concern with my complaint about the voice acting is I tend to read faster than the characters can talk, but you can't really skip through dialogue without skipping huge sections.
I didn't think about that, which I thought was annoying.
But I don't know if it was a glitch, but it was perfect. If it was not a glitch, it was perfect, but even if it was, it was still perfect. When you finally talk to your mom, it would not allow me to skip her dialogue.
Huh.
It's like, can't skip through mom's dialogue. Of course you can.
Listen to your mom.
Right, listen to your mother. I don't know if that was a glitch or not, but I thought it was pretty funny.
You know, but with this game, I think like it was a really, I'm sure we'll talk about gameplay. The game went through these like combat sections and a ton of talking.
Yes.
And this game was a little bit exhausting when you had to almost go through a talking section, but it was so well acted. I was really into really every story beat and every conversation because it was just, I feel like a lot of attention was put into the performance, which I mean this in the nicest way I can. Life is Strange is not the best performed game. Like, it's not very good. And there's a lot of problems with the voiceover, but they made an action game with a ton of voiceover. And did the same team make this?
Right.
The quality was just way higher.
And I'm glad you mentioned that too, because like there is so much talking in this game. The voice acting better have been good.
Yeah,
otherwise that would have been a huge problem. Yeah,
yes, indeed.
Sure.
Yeah, so you mentioned gameplay. Let's get into that. Great emphasis is placed on your relationship with there are 60 citizens you can interact with. You can further this by completing quests for them, hearing rumors from other people, or entrancing and interrogating them. And I thought it's a little bit of a Majora's Mask kind of dynamic where they feel like they interact with each other. Like they're not just there for your benefit. You know, they have relationships and beliefs and whatnot. And the crazy thing is that the better your relationship, or the more you know about these people, the higher your XP reward will be should you choose to drink their blood and kill them once your mesmerized level is high enough. And this is, you know, easier for weak-minded or, you know, simpletons, citizens, you know, like, and the more educated or, you know, wiser citizens are harder to entrance, right? Very interesting system. Citizens can also fall victim to various diseases that lower your net XP gained by killing them. You have to heal them to get the optimal amount. You can create cures by using a very bare bones, straightforward crafting system. By nature, feels a little bit more crucial than many other games that use one. I felt like it mattered more. This creates an interesting wrinkle when you are helping somebody and then they're suspicious of you. And it's like they question your motive, like, why are you helping me? You know, and like this is like the first game that I think I've ever played where they have good reason to suspect you. Like it could be like, are you helping me to be nice? Like, or are you helping me to kill me? You know?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's kind of interesting, an interesting dynamic. Something else that I didn't know about, because I played a completely clean, didn't kill anybody, any citizen. If you kill certain citizens, sometimes their loved ones will join the vampire hunters.
Oh, that's interesting.
So they'll
know that.
There's actually something else too. Like, I'm not going to say this is a downside, but I'll speak on this a little bit. There are some citizens in the game that have quote unquote side quests.
Yeah.
But if for the side quest to get solved, you have to eat them or the person they're interacting with for the quest to finish. So do you remember the interaction in the hospital where someone was debating whether to have their limb amputated or not?
Mm-hmm.
And their friend was saying yes or no. The operation will only happen if you eat someone involved with him.
Oh, interesting.
That's how you progress the quest.
Oh.
So if you were to go on a 100% morality run like Riley and I did, my man, you don't see the result of any of those side quests at all. Which I'm not saying it's a downside because it keeps the game very focused and away from stupid shit. Like, you know, this game did a good job of just not being a checklist of stuff.
But
it was a little weird wrinkle where you can't see the result of a lot of these conversations or conflicts.
Sure, yeah.
I don't mind that at all. I guess I don't mind that. And by the way, please lump me in into the, at least I attempted.
You tried.
I tried to get the 100% of morality, but
we're going to discuss that very crucial
thing sure. that killed you. Can I mention one really fun slash funny thing? I hope it's intentional about the citizens thing. It's called a menu. I really hope it's intentional because you can also choose to eat them. Like you're like on a restaurant menu. Like I saw that. I'm like, oh, please tell me they meant that on purpose.
Meat's if back not, on the menu, boys.
If there was a fork and knife, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So overall, I wanted to bring up a quote Nick had a couple months ago, maybe. I never really had the urge to play it, but once I booted it up, I was locked in.
That's true.
And I think that's a good way. That was how I felt. You know, like you mentioned a little bit, you know, the exploring dialogue sections versus combat. What did you enjoy more?
Sure. It's one of these almost like gaming the headspaces where, okay, I'm about to go to a new section of the city. There's going to be like 15 people to talk to.
Yeah.
I'm locked in for the next 2 hours, exhausting dialogue options.
Yeah.
But it's not... But I don't not enjoy talking to everyone, but I know I'm in here for a couple of hours of time. Not too different from our Disco Elysium discussion.
Yes.
There was a lot of talking and a lot of script.
Yeah.
Which I guess this game is a little bit tiring, I guess, in that aspect, where you're going to be doing a lot of reading.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of agree there. I think I preferred the combat and exploration over the heavy dialogue citizen section. I knew I at least wasn't going to try and eat anybody.
Yeah.
So I didn't try a ton of those quests because I was just like, what's the point of making them like me more if I'm never going to eat them to get experience anyway?
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this too. Like the game does a good job of if you exhaust people's dialogue options, I believe you get a tiny amount of EXP for learning stuff about them.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
That's true.
Something, now that we're talking about gameplay, something I think is very important that if you eat someone, you get a ton of experience points, which lends into your leveling up and whatever. But if you don't eat anybody, you are severely underleveled, mm-hmm. and the game is really hard.
Yeah.
So I like the talking sections because that was, not only did I find the performance good, I'm like, this is my one opportunity to get some tiny amount of experience.
I can grind
points.
Some experience right. here talking to people.
Because, you know, it's really hard to level up if you're trying to be a good guy.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a good amount of exploring, looking for mm-hmm. stuff that's going to improve your shit as well, like your weapons and whatnot. So to get further into the combat, you have a basic sort of health stamina system similar to our favorite games, the Souls series, mm-hmm. With the addition of a bite mechanic, which functions kind of similarly to posture breaking in Sekiro. I personally felt that the guns were underutilized.
I don't think I shot one the whole game.
Really?
Yeah. I got really mad at a few bosses and unloaded some shotgun shells on them.
Yeah, they all have different weaknesses, and so like the werewolves are weaker to guns.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have some motivation to use them. But I don't know, I thought it was kind of an undercooked part of the combat.
Definitely.
There is also a blood gauge, which can be spent on healing or upgradable moves. You have, it can also be filled by using specific weapons, by biting enemies or eating rats.
I love that.
And it's only rats. Yeah. There's nothing else. There are no cats. There's nothing, no dogs.
Only rats. Just rats.
Only rats. And every time he's like, I can't believe I'm doing this.
He's just so disgusted with himself.
And it's really funny because it's like, I mean, it's this or people, man. Like, there's no other animals here. I like this healing economy better than Bloodborne's vial system, personally, because it's kind of a similar vibe overall, as we talked. Helps entwine the nature of Jonathan's condition with the moment-to-moment gameplay experience. The XP that you mentioned can be spent on improving your character's numbers or learning and upgrading moves. To me, this is where the pacifist run-through really counts. It's not only, as you said... I didn't think this game was like hard, but it's probably a lot easier if you ate people, right? And you're kind of handicapping yourself here. It is ultimately, I felt like I was getting a less versatile combat experience because there is fewer moves that you can try out.
Yeah, that's what I feel like. That's almost the economy of the game. I do want to mention, just so I'm sure a lot of people listening have not played this.
Yeah.
make sure people know the various vampire hunters and generic enemies, you can bite them and eat them with no penalty to morality.
Yeah.
It's the main characters with names that you can't eat.
Right.
So I may make sure that's clear.
Yes.
And I like the healing and blood economy of this too, because I almost like was thinking several levels ahead where I'm like, well, I'm not going to level up that much. I'm not going to be able to experience all these skills. I think I'm going to swing away and heal myself.
You can reset, but it does cost you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And leveling up also takes a night. So time will progress if you level up.
And
so
people, you have to make sure you... People will get sick or quests will progress. You have to think about it before you do anything. So I was going to open up the floor here. How did you use your XP?
Sure. Mine was very short. I like I said, I was very... I don't know what the right word is. Economical, conservative when it came to this stuff. I think I focused on, I'm going to swing a weapon and heal myself so I'm never screwed.
Right.
Like I was very worried about soft locking myself in this game by not being strong enough to do anything, or I can't heal enough to survive something. I mean, I think I unlocked, I don't know what the ultimate move was, Abyss, where you can throw people in the air.
Oh,
dude, I didn't unlock much. I think it was healing, Abyss, and I'm just going to swing the weapon. I don't know about Nick. Go ahead.
A little bit more varied than that.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, a little bit. So,
Nick had some fun here.
Yeah, I mean, God, I'm going to have some fun with it. You're a freaking vampire. You can throw blood spears and hit people with big claws. Like, why am I not going to do that?
That was my main move, the spear.
So mine was more so the claws. Yeah. So I focused a lot of my attention on health and stamina.
Yep.
But secondary, I had the claws and... I have it written down here, the spring move where you can launch yourself at people.
Yeah.
So sure. I would like launch myself at people, use the claws, and then, you know, then bite them or some shit.
Yeah.
And I also had that one ultimate move with the blood cauldron move.
Yeah.
Where you can stun people and make their blood explode, kind of gnarly. But
I think to make it clear to like the audience, this game is like Bloodborne Light with a skill tree. That's the best way I was trying to sell the game to people. It's kind of Bloodborne-y combat with
EXP just enough skill. To be satisfying.
Just enough.
It's like that's
different,
what I
like
think.
Moves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I did want to, before we move on, I wanted to bring up, you were like, oh, there was DLC for this game.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that the version I bought had it, and I didn't know what it was going to present itself as. It's just like gear that you find like in your room in the hospital. And you get like a sword, and what it does is when you hit people with it, it refills your blood gauge.
Oh, so this game was probably a cakewalk for you.
Dude, I was like, why would you use anything else? Right. And I didn't realize that it was a DLC like, you know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think some weapons, when you upgrade them, granted you the ability to steal blood on contact.
The bone saw does.
This one does it like right out of the gate.
Yeah, so it's like super overpowered. Mm-hmm. Got it.
So kind of funny balance-wise.
You can also upgrade, we should mention, you can upgrade your bite too.
Yes.
To get more blood from people. I think the skill, it's really funny. It sounds like an energy drink. It's called Big Thirst. I found that useful kind of in the beginning because I felt like, at least in the beginning of this game, it was a little bit of an overpowered strategy to keep stun locking people and just biting them over and over again.
Yeah, sure.
But so that was kind of the way I progressed through the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid way to do it because, I mean, what it winds up happening is, I think your offhand weapon knocks down their stamina.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And but the next time you do it, it takes more.
Yes.
It takes more hits to knock them down like
that's
that.
That's right.
That's pretty cool. I would like to, unless you have any other further thoughts on that, get into the characters, the side quests.
Yeah, we should. The only thing I'll say is the combat is more serviceable than you would think from Don't Nod.
It's fun.
Life is Strange.
It's actually very fun combat.
Yeah, it's like a little janky, but not too janky.
Yeah, more enjoyable than I thought, but let's talk characters.
Yeah, let's get into the characters here. I thought it was very interesting that you have a wide cast of characters here that spanned all directions of the moral compass. Makes your choices a little more complicated. I think, very interestingly, they successfully portrayed people of different ethnicities and walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
Very different people, which is odd or unusual for an 1800s setting.
Mm.
Kind of swept under the rug normally. So I just wanted to mention some of my favorites. And if you want to chip in on those or talk about your own, feel free. I'm going to start out with, so my character, he gets into the hospital his first night and he immediately sniffs out that something's going on with, the security guard and he and one of the nurses are planning on running away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember this.
And I just thought it was really funny because it's like, I mean, I don't know. There's nothing necessarily wrong with what they're doing, but it's funny that your character is super duper serious, and it's one of the first things you can do. And I'm like, wow, this guy means business. Like, let's go. So I like that. I liked that one of the nurses.
Is that the person you accuse of having a relationship with someone else? Is that them or is that someone else?
They are having a relationship.
Yes. Yeah, that's that one.
Spoilers.
Right.
Nurse Brannigan is the character. She's like the Meryl Streep looking lady.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very interesting where she is a incredibly capable person, but because of the time period, she can't become a doctor.
That's right.
So everyone in the hospital is like, yeah, just like she's like the most trustworthy person we have. I'm like, oh, I feel really bad for her. Like, right. she's awesome. But the character who thinks she's a vampire, do you remember this?
Oh, yes, I remember her.
It's really funny because you obviously know she's lying because you are intimately aware of all your symptoms and everything. She's like, oh, I need blood. I have a thirst for blood. And it's kind of funny. It's an interesting that not a lot of other developers would create a character like that. I thought it was very interesting. The guy at the hospital who is stealing from the dead, the Indian guy. Dr. Rakesh.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, is he, this is kind of, I didn't know this at first, but you can like sneak up on people and like see what they're doing. You can like, you remember this where you're looking through windows at people? It's like you find a specific spot.
That's right.
Like, he's one of the first people you can do that with, and you can confront him and like, I saw what you're doing. And he's like, they don't need it. he's got a point.
He does have a point there.
Do you remember the fraudulent vampire hunter?
Oh, I love that guy.
Ichabod.
Ichabod.
He's like the Gilderoy Lockhart kind of character. He's very like, you know, you can smell his bullshit from a mile away.
He's very endearing. I liked him.
Yeah. I thought it was awesome. One of the first people you meet, he's like a town drunk, and then you find like the more you talk to him, you find out that he was like an anarchist and he blew up this other character's parents.
Yes.
And like, he's just like, he's been drinking himself into a coma ever since. That was a pretty interesting side quest.
This is the stuff you get when you start talking to people and doing their side quests. So it's, even if you're not going to eat them, it is rewarding in a sense.
Yeah.
Reminded
me a little bit of Oblivion where there's more to these characters than meets the eye. Yeah. They just have better voice acting. Did you do the quest with the murderer? The guy who, like, you find bodies in the sewer and you find out that he has been like just like a normal guy. He's like, it starts a kind of interesting dynamic with him because he's like, oh, are you going to blame me for all your crimes? Like, if you kill people, like, it's like something that you can do. It's just one of the random characters you meet. I thought that the florist was interesting. She's mute.
Yes.
And you can bewitch her or whatever, and she still doesn't speak. And I'm like, wow, she ain't kidding.
No. And people leave notes for her, or she leaves notes, something along those lines.
The poet in the graveyard and all that stuff. Yeah. But it's interesting because you have this character who can't speak or communicate normally. I think the only time you do is like if you kill her, like you hear her thoughts or whatever.
Okay,
that was pretty cool. The brothers. You remember the brother, like the twins?
We're going to run away or something.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there, and like, what are you waiting for? We don't know. Is this deep or is this like? Stupid.
Two dumb guys just like, not doing anything.
It was kind of interesting. Give me something to think about anyway. And I thought it was so cool how like later on in the game, it's not even, I don't think, mandatory, but you can run into your mom and the butler.
Yes.
And it's very, very, very interesting. And I'm like, wow, you can like eat your butler and your mom in this game.
Does it actually allow you to eat your mom?
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah, pretty dark.
That's awful.
So those were my favorite. I don't know. Do you have any other memorable outside of the main story?
Well, I was gonna. I don't want to talk. Like, I know we're gonna be talking spoilers. I mean, I think my favorites are really the main characters. So I don't want to say too much.
Yeah.
I thought the interactions with your mom are very interesting.
Yes,
where
she has dementia.
Where the game does this. It was kind of a hard line to see where. is that I wasn't sure if her voice acting, I'm not calling it bad,
yeah,
but I think she either has dementia or mental illness, and she's talking to you in a very, like, she's not with it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not sure if it's because of the craziness that's going on in the city or she has a mental illness.
Well,
I just felt like I would get more of an interaction with her when you finally get to meet her, but you get kind of a blank slate of nothing, and it's kind of unnerving, but I'm not sure if it was on purpose.
Well, I think you do wipe her memories.
Well, here's what you can do. I don't know if you guys did this at all, but if you progress her quest further, you can look in the window, like I was telling you, and you can see her talking with other members of your family who are dead.
Yes.
And so when that. you're the only person that you come clean with her that you're a vampire and you say I'm dead, she says I know. And it's like, so basically she doesn't believe that you're even really there.
Yeah, like everybody. That was the line that was kind of unnerving to me, or I'm not sure if she's mentally ill or she's kidding. Like, I don't really, because you just tried to have a serious moment with her and it doesn't land.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, she's totally checked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you have any other fun side people there?
Yeah. So I think for me, Riley, you mentioned a lot of them. I love the conversations with Jonathan Reed's mom. But one of my favorite interactions are between the poet in the graveyard and the publicist who keeps rejecting him, which I think is really funny.
Yeah.
I think there's a one line that I have screenshotted because it's very, very true to me. It said, the publicist says, "It's a very nice